Good morning. Welcome to lesson 10 of our class, Building Your Life for God. This morning, we're going to be starting a two-part series on Nehemiah and looking at the first two-thirds of that book as we continue our study from the book of Ezra from the last two classes that we've had and talking about the return of the Jews to Jerusalem. So happy Mother's Day to everyone out there and hope you've had a good morning. And this morning, what we want to do is cover basically the first seven chapters of Nehemiah. Again, I will highlight on the screen here that for those of you that need material, please email me. Or if you're not getting it for some reason, you can email me and I can make sure that we get you on the distribution list out from the email blast that we'll send. I will also be recording the lesson for next week, lesson 11, which is the second half of Nehemiah. And we'll be out of town next week, and that's why we'll be doing that. So hopefully the recordings are okay for you. I will encourage you to send me an email with any comments or questions that you have about the lesson, and we can address those next week, even in the recording and the week after. So we have three lessons left. We have this one, the second lesson on Nehemiah, and then we'll have one more lesson that covers Haggai and Malachi, and then that will be the end of our quarter, even though there'll be one additional week left in the quarter. But we have 12 lessons in our series, and we'll be able to get through all those in the next 3 weeks. So with that, let's look at our context for this morning. So we know that in 458 BC, 57 years approximately after the temple was rebuilt, Ezra went to Jerusalem. And so Ezra's return was supported by King Artaxerxes of Persia. And Ezra found that the Jews had some issues when he got there. He went back to teach the law and to establish the Jewish community. And when he returned, he found that the inhabitants of the land had intermarried, which was a violation of God's law and his command to them to only marry within the Jewish population and not intermarry with the people of the land due to their idolatrous practices and their pagan practices. And we discussed a lot of that last week. God's hand was with Ezra. We know that. It says many times that the hand of God was with him as he sought to teach the people and to convict them of their sin so that they could turn back to God and repent. And so the people did repent. At least we know that most of them did. Not all of them, but most of them did. And they severed their relationships with the women of the land or the men of the land, and they did turn back to God. A remnant did. And in 445 BC, now about 13 years after Ezra arrived in Jerusalem, Nehemiah hears, Nehemiah is the cupbearer to King Artaxerxes in Susa, back in Persia. And he hears that the walls of the city are in disrepair and they have not been rebuilt. And so this leads him to lead a group back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls specifically. He is he's amazed at the report that he gets from his friends that returned to Susa from Judah. And it moves him such that he decides to do this, to lead a group back. And that's what we're going to talk about in our lesson today, is Nehemiah's journey back to Jerusalem and his efforts to rebuild the wall. And so here we are, I don't know if you see the pointer on my mouse, we're down here during the time of King Artaxerxes I. So Ezra went back in 458 BC, and now we're in 445 BC, still during the reign of Artaxerxes. And so we'll jump right into it, and then at the end we'll return and do kind of a summary of these three returns, because Nehemiah leads the third return. There's the first return with Zerubbabel, the second return with Ezra, and now the third return with Nehemiah. So let's jump right into it in Nehemiah chapter 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 12th year, as I was in Susa the citadel, the Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire. And as soon as I heard these sayings, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you night and day for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you have commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. They are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name. And give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now I was cupbearer to the king. And so in this passage, we see now that Nehemiah's friend Hanani has come back from Judah. He had obviously gone there with Ezra or at some other time. And he brings a report to Nehemiah that the remnant there in the province is in great trouble and shame, that the wall is broken down and the gates are destroyed by fire. And this is very troubling to Nehemiah. And so he mourns and fasts and prays for several days and prays to God that he would return his people together in Jerusalem, gather them together, even though they had been scattered apart. As he had said, and he quotes several times here from the book of Deuteronomy about the promises made to Moses and to the people during the time of Moses. And so at the end, what it's referring to in verse 11 is that, grant me mercy in the sight of this man, that Nehemiah is about to go approach the king, the one whom he serves every day, and ask him to help him with his return and to grant his wish that he could return to help rebuild the walls. And so this is what Nehemiah is going to do in the subsequent passage here, is go and make a request of the king. Okay. And so we know that Nehemiah received a bad report about what was going on in Jerusalem. The walls are down, the gates are destroyed, and there's trouble and shame among the Jews there in Jerusalem. He fasted and mourned for days. He was very, very troubled by this news. And then he prayed to God ultimately and asked God to help him when he goes before the king to make a request to go back and to help rebuild those walls. Okay. So let's dive in now to Nehemiah chapter 2 as Nehemiah makes his journey to Jerusalem. Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 1. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, why is your face sad, seeing you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid, and I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire? Then the king said to me, what are you requesting? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone, and when will you return? And so it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me to the governors of the province, beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forests, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, for the good hand of my God was upon me. And then skipping down to verse 13, I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. And then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite, servant and Geshem, the Arab, heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build, and you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. So Nehemiah ultimately is sent back to Judah with the blessing of King Artaxerxes. And so verse 6 says, it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And that's interesting to me because we know by the end of the story that it only took 52 days to rebuild the walls, but it took a considerable amount of time to get to that point. And so I wonder what time Nehemiah actually told the king that he could get this done. But the king sends these letters and sends authority with Nehemiah to the region beyond the river back in Jerusalem. And so he is assisted by the government there in getting this done. Once he arrives, he goes out to inspect the walls and finds them just as the report stated, that the walls are broken down and the gates are destroyed by fire, as it says in verse 13. And so he rallies some men in Jerusalem. And he explains to them what kind of trouble they're in. It kind of gives them some perspective about the situation there in verse 17. And then rallies them and exhorts them to come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem. And he tells them, it's not just me. I'm not here just to be a cheerleader for you. But in verse 13, that God has been with him, that God has helped him up to this point. God helped him with the king. God helped him on his journey there, and how God will be with them and help them as they strive to rebuild the wall. And so the men say, let us rise up and build. And so they strengthen their hands for the good work in verse 18. But as we have seen in previous returns with Zerubbabel and rebuilding the temple, and with Ezra trying to restore community in the Torah, there is resistance. And this time it comes in the form of three men, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. And we'll hear more about them in a minute. But they are rebels, and Nehemiah basically tells them, get out of our way. You're not Jews. You have nothing to do with this. You know, leave us alone. We're going to accomplish this mission of rebuilding the wall. And so Nehemiah asked the king for help and to leave to go to Judah to rebuild the walls. He granted that wish, and when Nehemiah suggests they rebuild the walls, the people say, let us rise up and build. They're excited about this. Nehemiah has motivated them to do it. And no, we know that there's three men that are not happy about Nehemiah's return to rebuild the wall. Okay, so let's read now in chapter 4 about some of that opposition to the work, about what these men are going to do to try and thwart Nehemiah and God as they go to rebuild the wall. It says, now when Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he was very angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. Excuse me. And he said in the presence of his brothers and the army of Samaria, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that? And Tobiah the Amorite was beside him, and he said, yes, what they are building. If a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. And now Nehemiah, there's a transition here, it seems, in verse 4, as Nehemiah says, "Hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt, and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." And so we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were angry, very angry. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. And we prayed to our God and we set a guard as a protection against them day and night. Skipping down to verse 15, it says, "When our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, we all returned to the wall, each to his work. And from that day on, half of my servants worked on construction and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And the leaders stood behind the whole house of Judah who were building on the wall. Those who carried burdens were loaded in such a way that each labored on the work with one hand and held a weapon with the other. And each of the builders had his sword strapped at his side when he built. The man who sounded the trumpet was beside me. And I said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, 'The work is great and widely spread, and we are separated on the wall, far from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us.'" And so you can see the opposition was strong. These guys, Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arabs, the Ammonites, they were attacking. They were totally against the rebuilding of this wall. They make up several reasons for that. They think these are feeble Jews. They can't get anything done. And maybe rightfully so. They had been in the land for a long time and been unable to get this done. So why would they be able to get it done now? And so we see this opposition. It's strong. It's warfare. And so Nehemiah devises a plan where half the men will be protection and half the men will work. And every man will be armed and ready. And when there's an issue, when they come to attack, a man will sound a trumpet and all the men will come together and fight. And God will fight with them, as the passage ends in verse 20. So the men will rally, and God will also fight for them. And so we have this series of questions here that ends this passage. And it's, who fought for the Jews? Well, God. God fought for the Jews. That's how we ended in verse 20, with half the workers holding weapons, half the workers continuing to work, and Sanballat, Tobiah, and their local forces that aren't Jews deciding to attack and try and thwart the mission of rebuilding the wall. Okay. So that's external issues going on. We have these external fighters trying to thwart Nehemiah's mission, but there's also internal issues within the Jewish community. And it has to do, again, with the nobles and the leaders of the Jewish people not following God's law and not doing what was right. And so let's look and see internally what's going on among the Jews that is causing them trouble here in Nehemiah chapter 5. And so there grows a great outcry among the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers, their own people. "For there were those who said, 'With our sons and our daughters, we are many. Let us get grain that we may eat and keep alive.' And there were also those who said, 'We are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses to get grain because of the famine.' And there were those who said, 'We have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. Return to them this very day their fields, their vineyards, their olive orchards, and their houses, and their percentage of money, grain, wine, oil that you have been exacting from them.' Then they said, 'We will restore these and require nothing from them. We will do as you say.' And I called the priest and made them swear to do as they had promised. And I also persevered in the work on this wall, and we acquired no land, and all my servants were gathered together for the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 men, Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now what was prepared at my expense for each day was one ox and six choice sheep and birds, and every 10 days all kinds of wine in abundance. Yet for all this I did not demand the food allowance of the governor, because the service was too heavy on this people. Remember for my good, O my God, all that I have done for this people. And so Nehemiah recognizes that his own Jewish people are exacting a heavy burden on each other. They have had to borrow money from one another to pay the king's tax. And for that, their own brothers have mortgaged their fields and their vineyards. Some of them have even enslaved their children because of the debts that they owe for the money they've borrowed to pay this tax. And Nehemiah says, that's not right. It's too heavy a burden on the people. You need to undo this. You need to quit exacting this type of burden upon them. And so the lenders do agree. The noblemen, the leaders of the Jews who have been doing this, agree to unwind these debts, to release everyone in this time of famine so that they can all survive and all continue with Nehemiah's mission. But then Nehemiah also sees that he has been given authority to, as basically a government official, to exact from the people what he needs to survive while he's in the land. And he sees that this is being done by the local governors, and it's being done in a way that's a very heavy burden for the people. And so he decides that he's not going to do that. He takes the bare minimum that he needs to feed his men and the workers on the wall, and decides not to live in extravagance, not to tax them more than is needed to be done in order to survive, as the other governors have been doing. And doesn't even take the the full allotment of the food allowance that he's allowed to do under the decree of what the governors were able to do, because it's a heavy burden on the people. He doesn't want them to be distracted. He doesn't want their everyday livelihood and their worry and concern for that to distract them from their mission at hand, which is rebuilding the wall. And so we know that the Jewish people borrowed from each other, and the lenders were not treating them fairly. They were exacting on them a high level of interest, foreclosing on their fields and their vineyards and taking their children as slaves. And Nehemiah himself steps in. Not only did he try to lead the people and be a cheerleader for them and be the one to set the vision and the mission before them, but he also worked himself. He was among them in the same conditions they were in. He didn't live like a noble, and he didn't try to exact authority as a government official, but he lived among them, and he worked on the wall with them. And so Nehemiah 6 shows us more resistance and how they begin to overcome as they work toward finishing the wall. And so when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set up the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together at Hapkephirim in the plain of Ono. And they intended to do me harm. So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave and come down to you? For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking, their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. And so in verse 15, it says, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. And when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. So one last attempt here by Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem to lure Nehemiah away from the work, to get him to come down and meet them in the plain of Ono. But Nehemiah is too smart for their plan. He realizes that this is something meant to be a distraction to take him away from the work and to try to stop the work. And so he refuses to go, but instead prays to God to strengthen his hands at this time so that they can finish the wall. And finally, we see that in 52 days, in verse 15, after 52 days, they finished the wall. And when the enemies of them and the enemies of in the surrounding area heard, they were greatly afraid, and they perceived that this only could have been accomplished with the help of our God. And so, to stop building the wall, his enemies try to get him away from the work, to lure the leader away so that the people would stop working. But Nehemiah asked God to strengthen his hands as he resisted Sanballat and Tobiah. And how is it possible for the workers to finish a wall in 52 days? It's a remarkable feat. Only one explanation for that. God was with them. God was working with them and helping them in all that they did. They had their mind set on a mission, and they had a vision to fulfill that, and God blessed their work and worked with them to get it finished in 52 days. And so, you know, before we jump into the lessons, I wanted to kind of do a little recap. I don't have a slide for this. Maybe I should have made one, but in the three returns that we see, first with Zerubbabel in 536, and then with Ezra in 458, which was about 60 years later, and then Nehemiah 13 years later in 445 BC. Zerubbabel was sent to rebuild the temple. He had a specific purpose, a specific mission to rebuild the temple. And remember, he also faced opposition. He had opposition from the locals who didn't want to see the temple rebuilt. And so this was done under King Cyrus. And the rebuilding of the temple and the restoration of temple worship was something that had been prophesied back in Jeremiah 25. And so it was a noble mission. It was a mission God wanted accomplished. And he was with Zerubbabel as they rebuilt the temple and finally finished it in 515. And the second return with Ezra sought to teach the people the law. His mission was to restore the Torah, to get people aligned again with God's law, and to restore the Jewish community and center it around that law, make that the culture of the Jewish community in Jerusalem. But again, he faced opposition or a dilemma or challenge as he tried to do this. And that when he returned, he found that the men had intermarried and that there was great concern over that violation of the law because of the potential idolatrous and pagan practices that were going to infiltrate that culture, that would take them away from the Torah and take them away from God and pull them into the surrounding cultures. And this was done under King Artaxerxes, as they're going in 458 BC. And now we see Nehemiah's return in 445 BC, where his specific mission is to rebuild the city walls and not without opposition. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem are his chief enemies, and resisting the building of the wall, even to the point where they're attacking, and Nehemiah and his workers have to defend themselves with swords. And so each of these men had a noble mission: rebuild the temple, restore the law, rebuild the city walls. All of them faced opposition, but despite that opposition, God was with them, and they each were successful in fulfilling their mission that they were sent to do. And so, when we look at lessons that we can learn from this first part of Nehemiah, I think one thing we can learn from all three of these returns is that when God is for us, who can stand against us? And we're all familiar with that very sentiment from Romans chapter 8. But God was with Nehemiah, and he helped him to realize his vision of rebuilding the walls. And God blessed his effort, and because of that, God was with them and helped them. And they were able to complete the wall in only 52 days. And the other thing I think that's interesting here is that Nehemiah made God part of his plan from the beginning. God wasn't his safety net. God wasn't someone that he turned to when things got bad, when he started to face opposition. But God was part of the plan from the start. From the time that Nehemiah went to King Artaxerxes to request a return and help with rebuilding the walls, God was there and God was with him. And so God blessed his return. He blessed his work and he helped him accomplish his mission because he was made part of the plan up front. So often today we think we can do it on our own and set off on our own plans And we don't put God into the plan until we run into problems. But that wasn't the case with Nehemiah. We can't make God our safety net. God needs to be part of the plan up front. And Nehemiah had courage to do the right thing. Despite resistance, Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah all had great courage. They all had great faith that God was with them and helping them. And Nehemiah and the people persevered in the face of danger, even with swords on their belts and shields, and half of them working as a protection force. They had courage to continue building the wall because it was the right thing to do, and it was a mission being blessed by God. And then lastly, I think one thing we can see from Nehemiah is that we need to lead by example. Nehemiah could have showed up and just started barking orders at people. He could have put a plan in place and kind of stood by and supervised and lived a lavish lifestyle, you know, with the blessings of the king while he watched people work. But he didn't do that. He jumped right in. He was part of the workforce. He was in the trenches with them every day, working alongside his countrymen, helping them undo their unjust practices against each other, exercising usury and enslaving children and charging high interest and things to their own men that were preventing them from being successful as a people and distracting them from their mission of building the wall. Nehemiah was right in the thick of it. He was with them, leading by example each and every day. And the whole time, he is invoking God in the mission, asking God for strength, asking God to continue to bless them and protect them in their work. So he was a great example for the people. So he worked hard, and he worked with God to get the mission accomplished. And so that's our lesson for this week on Nehemiah. A great lesson, lots of good points to be made about the people rallying around to do the work, to rise up and build the wall, and to get it done with God as he blessed their plans to rebuild the city walls of Jerusalem. And so next week, we're going to have a lesson that now intertwines Ezra and Nehemiah, as they are both there with the people in Jerusalem. And we'll have some closure to their time, or at least their prophecies with us. And we will wrap up, I guess, the accounts of Ezra and Nehemiah and their work with the Jewish people there in Jerusalem. So if you have any questions or comments on the lesson, please send me an email, and I'll try and address those next week when we do the recording. Other than that, hope you all have a wonderful Sunday afternoon, and we'll see you next week.